If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about taking relationships to the next stage. The breakup stage, that is.
I mean, kind of.
The friends after breakup stage, that is. Is that better?
Sure.
Okay.
Friends after breakup stage, sure.
So, even Google knows that this is a thing. When we were preparing for this, I typed into Google how to stay friends, and it auto-suggested with your ex after that. And this is a topic that is near and dear to our hearts. So let's talk about our experiences as well as some more general advice about this, some studies about it, and even some things about the people you maybe shouldn't try to stay friends with after you've broken up.
Yeah. So our dear Dedeker is not with us today because she is currently in the air.
You made it sound like she died.
Sorry.
Our dear Dedeker is no longer with
us. I said not no longer, but just like she's not with us at this particular moment in time because she is in the air.
She's on an airplane.
Not like in the air to the beyond.
Yes.
But just like in the air on an airplane.
She's in the air probably somewhere over the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
At this point in time.
The Strait of Gibraltar or something.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Is that a thing?
I don't know where that is.
I don't know either. If it's on the way to Japan or not. But anyways, you are missed, Dedeker, and we decided to do this episode without you.
Yes. So, Emily, can you explain why this episode, or like why this topic is near and dear to our hearts, meaning yours and mine specifically?
Yeah, well, we went on this tour that was 2 weeks, and it was almost really, truly the entire month of like preparing for going to Tucson, Arizona, and doing this like intense multiple workshops and like just our time in Tucson. Like, you guys visited my mom and everything, and then also it was us going on the actual tour for 2 solid full weeks together, and then coming back and doing a show here in LA. And so it was just a very long time of like being really together, the three of us.
Yeah.
In like it just close quarters. So I was struck by how interesting that all was during this time, and like how myself like fitting into the dynamic of the two of you, like how that was and how I felt about that. Because it is different, obviously, like than what I would have done had the three of us all been in a romantic sexual relationship together. And it just struck me like, huh, I want to explore this a little more and I want to talk about this because I didn't exactly always know where I fit. Like, there are times we joke about this that, like, we all get into our podcast mode and, like, sometimes, like, the claws come out and we get a little, like, rah, 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 rah. Especially the two of you sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And I tend to, like, fit into this mediator role. And then when that's not there, like, when all of us are, like, super getting along, sometimes I'm like, well, how close can I act towards them? Like, how close, or can I insert myself into like their intimacy? Is that not okay? Like, it's just an odd, interesting place to be in. And I'm assuming some of our listeners out there feel the same way. So I just wanted to talk to you about that today.
Yeah. So I guess to give a little bit of context for those of you who are maybe new listeners
and who are like, what the fuck are they talking about?
What the fuck are they talking about? When we started this podcast 4 years ago, Emily and I had been in a relationship for a few years. Both of us were in relationships with Dedeker and,
Brad. Well, not you, but Dedeker and I were in a relationship with Brad.
Right. And so we were all kind of connected in this triad slash quad but each relationship sort of stood alone. It wasn't like a couple dating a third or anything like that. Like each relationship existed independently, as well as in the way that they were all interconnected like that.
Yeah, and there were moments in that quad and triad situation that, like, were the best times of my poly life for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were some really, like, beautiful, amazing moments during that. But then, obviously, things changed. Like, a lot of upheaval, a lot of, like, difficulty, a lot of tension occurred. And, like, basically the entire thing just, like, blew up and scattered to the wind. And through that, Jace and Dedeker and I were no longer in a romantic relationship with each other. I was not in a romantic relationship with either of them, but obviously they have remained in a sexual and romantic relationship together.
However, we've stayed close friends through that.
Yes.
And it's changed a little over the years. It's evolved. We've, you know, obviously been business partners doing this podcast together.
Yeah.
And how long ago was this? Because in my mind, it's like, oh, that was just the other day.
God damn it.
Because to me, everything was just the other day.
No, I know. I mean, in ways it feels like just the other day, but then in ways it doesn't.
It was 3 years ago?
It was around, around early March 2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
When, like, all of that changed. Yeah, when all of that changed.
A little over 3 years ago now.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we should have celebrated our breakup anniversary.
Yeah, well, we were like doing other shit, like
planning for this fucking tour
that just happened. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it did change drastically, and honestly, like you and I were still living together for a while.
Yeah, we still lived together for what, a couple months
until like July of that year.
Right. So for several months.
For several months, yeah, June or July of that year.
Right after breaking up, which, you know, essentially, if we were to look at it more from like a relationship anarchy point of view, meaning that we ended the sexual and sort of like romantic affectionate part of our relationship at that point.
Yeah.
But stayed close, but it wasn't like we instantly went to being super comfortable and best friends.
No.
I mean, that definitely took some time.
Well, and we'd like, you even had talked about, like, well, you know, we can do this. Like, we're different than other people. We can try.
Mm-hmm.
And our lovely chiropractor, Dr. Mike, was like, no, move out. Like, move out. And I think in a way, like, he was right. Like, we did need that distance from one another. Like, I was able to move in to a place by myself for, like, 3 months. And that was really lovely. It was, like, a really nice time for me because I had never done anything like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know you, like,
I got roommates and stuff.
Yeah, and maybe had a nice
in my place with me.
Healing process from that standpoint as well.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And we've talked about this in the past, but it's been a long time since we've discussed this.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially for us, it was about right around the 6 month mark where we both sort of realized that we'd hit this transition from this thing where we worked well together. We still cared for each other, but there was definitely like trying to renegotiate how do we act around each other, like what is this relationship now, you know, feeling hurt about it sometimes, to about 6 months to where we both separately had this realization and then talked about it together of like, hey, we just hung out and it was cool.
Yeah, and it was
really
good.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it was at a Florence and the Machine concert.
Yeah,
so maybe it was the magic of
The concert.
The healing magic
possibly
of Florence and her machine.
Yes. I mean, always. Absolutely. She did great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so it did. There was definitely like a transition time there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not here to say that we did this the best way.
Sure. It wasn't perfect by any means. But I do like, I do really appreciate the fact that it's a testament to how we were able to like get through shit and come out on the other side like so well, and that we have such a powerful connection still.
Yeah.
And with Dedeker too. I mean, that was a much like shorter relationship for me, obviously, than it was with you, but still incredibly meaningful and powerful in my life, in different ways. But I think that that's really important as well.
And I think what's also important is the fact that those relationships have continued.
Yes, to evolve.
to evolve and to grow.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the way I've definitely had breakups in the past, you know, especially when I was younger, where we'd break up and we'd say we were going to be friends.
Mm.
And sometimes we would kind of give it a go at being friends and just kind of wouldn't after a while.
Were those like really intense relationships? Like you were engaged for a while. Like what happened there? Yeah. Did you try to be friends with her?
We stayed civil with each other, mm-hmm. but it was definitely like I was very hurt by that. I think she was also upset by it. Like both of us were definitely like, no, like we stayed, like I said, we stayed civil. And I think now, like, we're still Facebook friends. Like I'll see her updates sometimes about her, you know, husband and her kids and all that sort of stuff. Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of that's that we wanted sort of different things from our lives and,
totally.
And we've gotten them. So in that way, I don't think either of us are sort of holding out this like, man, that was my one shot at happiness and I lost it.
No, of
which
course.
Would definitely make that a lot harder. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But in those cases, though, it's like, you know, I barely have any contact with her. That's not something that's, you know, like an active relationship in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've had other relationships with exes, some of whom, like, I would say that we're friends now, but we don't talk a ton, you know, we're more like kind of old friends, maybe would be a way to think of it. Because it's like, yes, we shared a lot of time together, so we have some closeness, but it's not like we're currently close or that we actively still hang out a lot.
Yeah.
With very many of those. Now, more recently... you know, you're the biggest example of this for me,
yeah.
of someone who I feel like I'm even closer with now.
Sure.
Than I was when we were together romantically, partly just because there's been more time.
Yeah, like, I mean, we have a huge amount of history.
Yeah.
It's going on 8 years now.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like more recently, I definitely have more... exes who were still friends again, like maybe not as actively or seeing each other as often, but it's like, yeah, I think of them as good friends because they did sort of share this part of my life,
mm-hmm.
or we were definitely very close for a while, so that even after some time's gone by, which I think is important, like we said, it took about 6 months to like get a sense of normalcy with hanging out a lot. Business wise, in that time there, and you know, even living together for part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, if you weren't kind of in a way like forcing yourself into that situation, could even take a little bit longer.
Yeah,
but there's something actually really nice I found about like restarting those relationships.
Sure, I mean, there's such a narrative out there with other people that I've talked to that like if you have a relationship and it ends, then you cannot be friends with that person anymore. Like it's done. Like it's terrible. Mm-hmm. It ended. Like everyone's upset and like you never fucking want to see that person again.
Yeah. It's the whole, like, it's called a breakup because it's broken.
Yeah, thing. I guess, or something to that degree, which is really interesting to me because I never have really felt that way. I think I had like one or maybe a couple relationships where I was like, yeah, I do not need to see that person again. But
right.
for the most part, like, I've remained at least cordial mm-hmm. with the people that I've been with before. Like, you've met a ton of my exes over the years. And like, yeah, Josh just met an ex of mine. Like, we went to this guy that I dated in college, he was doing like a cocktail party type thing. And we went to that and like tried a bunch of cocktails for a new restaurant that he's opening. And that was a blast. And like, it was really fun. So
to get back to kind of the core of why we're talking about this today, this is a question we get a lot. Like you mentioned this, it's something that you definitely hear people ask you, both about like what our deal is and also like, how do I transition a relationship from being romantic to being a friend.
Yeah, and people ask stuff about you too if they know about like me and you, and they're like, "Wait, is Jace still dating Dedeker?" And like, "Oh, like how do you feel about that? Like, how do you fit into that?" And I'm like, "Great, like no problem. Like it's good. It fits well."
Right, and it's I don't know. It's such an interesting thing because we are taught that there's this huge difference between being romantic with someone and being friends with someone, and that you can't be one with the other, or like that, like the sort of the common idea, and we're going to talk about these in a little bit here about some studies and statistics about this.
Yeah.
But just the idea that being afraid to like have sex with someone you're friends with, because we have this idea that sex ruins friendships, right? Or the idea that, you know, on the other side, we have the thing of like, oh, the ideal romantic partner for you is someone who you've been friends with first.
Yeah.
Right? Like, especially for me being raised Christian, that was very much like the narrative you're given.
Oh, fascinating.
Partly because that's because you're not having sex.
You're not going to have sex with your friend, but then...
Right.
When you are united under God.
Right. But then once you finally realize you're in love with each other, then you can have sex. But you already had to have that friendship first.
So much tension. You know each other so well. God. Yeah.
Yes, God. and, right, so there's like that side of it. Mm-hmm. And then the other side where it's like we divide, or not the other side, but like related to that, is that we... separate our relationships by whether they have sex in them or not.
Yeah. And that I think is so interesting. And again, we'll get to that. But like this idea that a person is not as important in your life if you're not having sex with them.
Yes.
And
that's for
that
sure.
Illogical fallacy. It's just, it's too bad because it also causes things like, you know, you will bail out on your friend before your lover or something, or if you're having sex with someone, that means like they automatically get like the plus one, or they get just various benefits that your friend doesn't get.
Even and if that friend has been in your life
for longer,
five times longer.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And so it is kind of unfortunate how we place so much emphasis on these romantic relationships over our friendships, when in reality, like you and I both know how incredibly important like this relationship that we have and the relationship that I have with Dedeker, how important those are, and that like I wouldn't want to bail out on you guys for anything, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though maybe I have. Sorry. If that's ever happened. I think I do a pretty good job considering we have a fucking business and need to like stay on task, but yes.
For sure. And that's not to say that like just because someone's your friend means you have to, you know, be at their beck and call every second of the day.
Sure, yeah, but
there is this, I think what you're getting at is this assumption that because you're having sex with someone, they're always going to trump
everyone else's
relationship.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think that for polyamorous people, there's like a little bit of a breaking away from some of the traditional narratives, but that one is still so strong.
Oh, yeah.
There's like two parts to it. One is just that idea that the same thing, that like you're going to prioritize your relationships that are sexual over your ones that are not.
Mm-hmm.
And that like the ones that have sex involved, which tend to be the ones we also call the romantic relationships, are just categorically completely different from the friendship relationships.
Yeah, when in reality, they're probably not in most ways.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, in some ways they might be, but really like, they could be more intimate in various ways.
Are you familiar with the book Save the Cat? It's a book about screenwriting.
Oh, yes. No, you've had it. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a copy of it.
Yeah. It's a super famous book about, you know, writing films.
Yeah.
And in it, the author, he breaks down, you know, different genres and talks about sort of key components that need to be in those different types of genres and sort of what tend to make good versions of that and what don't, whatever. Anyway, so one of the categories is a rom-com, right? It's a romantic comedy. And so he kind of talks about how like there's this thing where there's the two characters who are, you know, interested in each other, but often start out like either hating each other or something happens early on that drives them apart.
Very much like who is it? Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan and You've Got Mail.
Sure, yeah.
Yes.
There's like either they start off hating each other or they like each other, but something drives them apart, whether it's some kind of lie or some kind of like other obstacle or something. And then by the end of the movie, they overcome that obstacle and then they get together.
Mm-hmm.
And then he defines another genre, which he calls the buddy cop movie, which is doesn't have to be cops, but that's sort of the you know.
Yeah, like Superbad.
Prototype of it.
Sure.
But yeah, it's like the buddy movie. It could be I Love You, Man, or Dumb and Dumber, or right. There's like
which is totally a romantic comedy, too.
Well, so that's the thing is his definition in that book of what is a buddy cop movie is exactly the same as a romantic comedy, but with no potential for sex.
Huh.
And he even spells that
they
out. It's like these
they're gonna
two
maybe
formats.
Fuck,
well, okay. But these two formats are exactly the same as each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one has potential for sex and the other doesn't.
Fascinating.
And it is like, it does break down to being like even writing movies. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, just that alone, we define it as a different genre, even though all the pieces of it might be the same.
Yeah. So, okay. If you want to become a friend with your ex, it's not going to happen immediately. Like, we found that, right?
Yeah.
When we were in Boise, we went to an amazing class with Cunning Minx and Lusty Guy.
From Polyamory Weekly.
Yes, from Polyamory Weekly. All about how to, like, the art of the breakup was what the class was called. And Cunning Minx talked about, like, it might take a long time to go out to coffee or out to dinner with your ex. Like, it might take, like, 6 months to a year. And that's something that we didn't really do. We just, like, kind of dove right the fuck into it.
No, we didn't. And part of it was that we had a commitment.
Yes.
That
we had a child.
A podcast.
We had a podcast child.
Well, but, so, just to be real, though, like, for a lot of people, staying friends with an ex is about an actual child.
Yes.
Not just a podcast baby.
Yes.
Which doesn't wake us up in the middle of the night. Crying, right?
Although we might wake up in the middle of the night crying about it. That's the difference.
Yes, that's true. But right, like there could be some sort of practical, pragmatic reason keeping you together, or it could just be a choice that you're making, but either, or, you know, it could be, you know, other factors. Maybe you own property together or, there's a whole host of reasons.
Yeah.
But if you don't have those, or even if you do, like the example that Cunning Minx was making was having a breakup and the other person being like, I hope we can stay friends and go out for coffee sometime. And she's like, yeah, absolutely. I just need a little time to recover and kind of regain my sense of self. Oh, and that, like, amount of time is going to be a year.
Yeah. They were like, okay, like a week or something. And they're like, no, like a year. And Cunning Minx was like, nah.
And long, you know, time. That might vary person to person a little bit, but I think that a lot of people make the mistake, and I've definitely done this, of feeling like you can just make this very smooth transition from being romantic and like super involved in each other's lives, over at each other's places all the time, to being best friends right after that. It's like, oh, it's simple, right? We'll just remove the sex and the romance part, but we're going to stay best friends.
But like, how many of us have fucked our exes? You've never done that?
I mean, probably.
Yeah, come on.
But not even that, but just like trying to stay friends, but like,
oh no, sure,
being shitty to each other or just
bitching
at each other.
Yeah, like the possibility for that.
Stuff.
Totally.
Also, I remember after you and I had broken up and were like trying to be friends, we had some conversation where I forget even who was saying this, because I feel like this has come up in a lot of times with exes trying to be friends, is the sort of like, well, I don't feel like you're being a very good friend. And the comment that was told to me afterward was, you know, it's funny. Like, I was telling a friend about this and they were like, you know, what's funny is that I think the only time I've ever heard someone say those words is when they're an ex trying to be friends.
Yeah. Because friends don't, you're absolutely right. Like, friends don't say that. They're just like, well, he's like fucking weird today. You know, whatever. Who cares?
Right.
Or just like, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because, like, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It only if something catastrophic happens, or if like it's an ongoing thing of like this friend being shitty, would you have to examine that?
Right.
But yeah, you're right. In those types of relationships, it's like, well, what constitutes a good friend? And are you actually just like, yes. transferring on to that person what you believe a good friend or not should be.
Well, and I think part of the challenge is recalibrating.
Sure.
It's
yeah.
this idea that, like, how do you recalibrate mm-hmm. what this relationship should be going from a romantic and especially, you know, romantic and sexual relationship where it brought with it all this like cultural baggage about how important this should be, how prioritized it should be,
mm-hmm.
all these sorts of things. Whether or not those are things we should be bringing to our relationships is maybe a topic for another time.
Yeah.
But we still have those. Even if we try to fight against them, they're still culturally given to us. Then trying to be friends, it's this like, what does that look like? How much time is that? Like, what is that? What yeah. do I get out of this relationship now? Like, all those questions don't really have clear answers right away.
No, I mean, absolutely. And again, like, it takes time and it takes a little bit of distance, I think, to be able to start answering those questions. Mm-hmm. So we also wanted to talk quickly about friends with benefits, because this is something that we've been like on about when, in our relationship anarchy classes that we've had at the two conferences we went to over tour.
Yeah.
So there's a couple, there's a study that we were talking about. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I think this one's interesting because we, like, in talking about all this about mm-hmm. how to be friends after a breakup, it's like, ooh, yeah, like, you can't really do that right after. Or maybe people are thinking, like, oh, maybe it is a breakup because it's broken mm-hmm. and you shouldn't do that. And a lot of people will give you that advice, right?
Yeah.
Of, like, don't try to be friends with an ex.
Yeah.
And then people also, like I said earlier, think about this with friends with benefits of going, well, I'm friends with this person. I don't want to have sex with them because I'm worried that'll
ruin it.
The relationship.
Yeah.
And so in 2013, there was a study done at the University of Louisville in Kentucky.
Louisville
in Kentucky.
I lived in Cincinnati. It's right across the pond from it, the river.
Louisville in Kentucky. And this study surveyed over 1,000 college students. And first of all, the second most common reason for people saying why they were hesitant to get into a friends with benefits relationship was because they were worried it would ruin their friendship.
Yeah.
The first most common being worried that they would develop feelings for the other person that wouldn't be reciprocated.
Oh, shit.
Which sounds like being interested in anyone to me, but
yeah.
whatever.
No, totally. It's like that's always an issue, potentially. Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so amongst these 1,000 college students, there were 300 of them who had had a friends with benefits in the past year that had already ended.
Mm-hmm.
So sometime during the past year, they'd been friends with benefits with someone, but it had ended already.
Meaning like they're just not fucking anymore.
Meaning they're not having sex anymore.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that 80% of those people said they were still friends with that person.
Fascinating.
So the idea that like, oh, that's the end of a friendship, statistically not true.
Only 20% is that true.
Right.
Yeah.
And if I think about friends I had in college, like, that kind of happened anyway. Like some you stay friends with, some you don't, right?
Sure.
Like it changes over time.
Totally.
What's more though, is that 50% of those people reported feeling as close or even closer to this former friends with benefits than they were before they had started being friends with benefits. So before they had started having sex, that they felt now even closer or just as close as before. So 50%.
Yeah.
So again, like looking at all of these statistics and just being like that notion that like sex is the thing that's going to ruin a relationship is absolutely not true.
No, totally. I mean, I think at the very least, like it's interesting to talk about the way in which our society views sexual relationships and friendships, like that sex is going to ruin a friendship or that like a friendship will be ruined or that like a relationship with someone will be ruined by trying to be like friends with them instead of having sex with them too.
And on the other side,
if
you're not having sex with someone you're romantic with,
sure.
That's the ruin of that relationship.
No, exactly.
That's what people think, right? It's like, oh, if you're not having sex, it must be because you don't love them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or you don't love them like in this way that is as intense and intimate as a sexual relationship. So that's why we bring up friends with benefits, because again, like it's this weird idea of what our society is like placed on this specific type of relationship. And we're saying like, that's not necessarily true.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those ideas. So also another thing that we wanted to talk about was this Oxford University study, which found that most people out there have a core group of five friends or close family members, which is interesting. Like, if you go back and think about all the people in your life that you're super, super close to that you see on a regular basis, Oxford University found that there's five people in your life.
It's about five.
About five,
it can
sure.
vary a little bit.
But so there's also this idea that when like a significant other comes into the picture, that number drops to four. So the significant other takes up one of those spots and then also like, I think, gets rid of another person. So that's really interesting because I know like for myself, I've definitely like drop the ball on friends when a significant mm-hmm. other came into the picture. Less so now for sure, but when I was a kid, like when I was in, I think like high school, like even my best friend at times, like if a significant other wanted to hang out, I would be like, yeah, sorry, James, like I gotta do this. Like even in the middle of hanging out, like I remember once I did that and he was super upset about it, like super offended, and he right. should have been because that was shitty of me. But yeah,
but it's so normal.
It like, is.
I feel like I've definitely done very similar things. I've yeah. had friends do it to me.
And it's not like looked down upon because it's like, well, you know, they're the most important person. Like they're the person that you're spending the most time with and that you should be. They are entitled to that time.
Right.
And so your friends just need to deal with it. And that's kind of fucked up.
For sure.
Yeah. So, I don't know, it's an interesting idea also, like, if your significant other then becomes your friend, like, are they making this, like, lateral move from, like, one of the five?
They had to take
over
up one of those five.
Yeah.
And now they just still stay in that five.
I don't know, but then that's the question of, like, well, if another significant other comes in, like, are they going to be the first on the chopping block or not? I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I think that it's maybe a whole other discussion, but
yeah,
we've often talked in polyamory about how like love is infinite, but time is not.
Sure.
Right.
I know that's very true and unfortunate that like one has to like limit it potentially to this amount of people, but you're absolutely right that like there's not enough time to see and do everything in one day. So right. I don't know.
Right. Or 1 month or
yeah.
1 year or whatever. Yeah.
Totally.
And so
one
I think
week.
Part of this too, and I think this is important when, like, oftentimes after a breakup, especially if it's one that's difficult, even if we do want to remain friends, but mm-hmm. it's tough for us, we'll tend to lean more on our friends or our family members for
yeah.
that support that we need. And so because of that, like, we might also have less time for that ex-partner who's now trying to be a friend,
mm-hmm.
That like taking that into account, and I think having that sort of buffer period of like, yes, let's do that, but let's not place this expectation that we're going to be besties right away.
Sure.
And want to like do movie nights every week right away. Like, I know a few people who've done something like that and claim that it has worked for them, but so very few.
Yeah.
Compared to the number who've tried to be friends and have not.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's important to look at like why you're deciding to be friends or be friends right away with this person. And I think we're going to get into that.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love adamandeve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I.
Okay, so we were teasing this a little bit earlier, but the ideas of relationship anarchy, and we've done a couple episodes about relationship anarchy, which you can go back and listen to. If you go to multiamory.com, there's like a search bar. And
which
it's actually,
most people don't know about.
It's actually my favorite feature of our site, actually. And I didn't even know that when I installed it on our site years ago.
But now it's become that?
No, it is. Honestly, like anytime someone asks me a question about, have you ever done an episode on this? Or do you have any resources about this?
I don't know.
Let's look. Try some things, put them in that search bar. Mm. And especially now that we have transcripts for our episodes, it's searching through all of that as well. So we're getting even better results on more recent episodes since we started doing transcripts.
Well done, past Jace.
Yeah, thanks. But anyway, I highly recommend checking that out. But we've done a couple, and also there's some blog posts on there about relationship anarchy. Mm. So that's definitely a good resource for learning more about that. But essentially, the sort of core idea there is taking away that hierarchy that we were talking about earlier, where someone you're having sex with or who you're romantic with is always going to fall into this category that they're more important than anybody else.
Yeah.
And instead, it's about customizing your level of commitment with all the different people in your lives. With all the different people in your life. Lives.
Your multiple lives.
Jeez. All your lives.
Your past and future lives.
Yes.
But yeah, and I appreciate that too, because it can, if like, for example, your relationship in its current state isn't serving you, then you can decide maybe together or by yourself just like the best way in which that relationship can serve you. For example, like maybe you and I, we were like not as good romantically, but we decided like, hey, let's take the parts of our relationship that really work and continue to work and develop those. And that's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
And that those can change over time.
That's true. Like nothing is finite. Nothing is like, well, you know, it's all dynamic and nothing is static. That's right. What I'm getting at. Yeah.
Yeah. That like even something like that about like how your romantic life is together, or maybe how your sex life is together, or maybe how well you do at living together.
Sure.
Right. There's a lot of things that maybe at one point in your life might be a good fit and at another point in your life might not be. So maybe right now that's not a very good fit.
Mm-hmm.
That as long as you're able to work together and to talk about those things and to give each other space when you need it and not try to force each other into a certain type of relationship, like we were saying about that, like, well, you're not being a good enough friend, that kind of thing, that like there's that aspect of it. But also like in the future, you might be good at those things again, for whatever reason. It might be circumstances in your life out of your control, or it might just be changes in your own life or in their life.
Yeah.
But the fact is that those things can change.
Yeah.
And as long as you're willing to give each other that space for those things to change, then they can.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very like intentional way of doing relationships, because again, it doesn't like, it's not any prescribed thing that says, okay, we're moving upon this escalator. And like I think you talked about this, that your brother once upon a time was like, well, if I don't move in with this person, then that means like the relationship's over.
Right.
But for example, you know, you and I moved out and weren't together anymore, but we still like continued our relationship in a different fashion, but it still was there and still was really meaningful.
Right. And in that way, as we said, moving out actually led to kind of feeling like, oh, great. Like now we can be a little closer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's definitely been something that's changed. Also, like in my relationship with Dedeker, while still being romantic and sexual, we have sometimes large chunks of the year, you know, like 5 months apart in different countries. Right. And then we'll also have many months at a time up to even like close to a year where we've lived together while traveling.
Sure.
So it's like we can go back and forth between those states and it's one of those doesn't mean the relationship's doing better. And then when we're apart, it means the relationship's doing worse.
Yeah.
That instead the relationship just keeps going. There's just certain like circumstances of it that change.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very relationship anarchy. It's good.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So there definitely can be challenges with all of this. Like, for example,
you mentioned that on tour.
Yeah. What was difficult for me was that, like, I saw both of you as people that I had been intimate with, like, sexually. And then I saw both of you, like, as this separate entity from me, like, existing in your relationship bubble to a certain degree, like, your romantic relationship bubble. And I didn't always know, like, how to incorporate myself into that because, like, I was not going to be, like, a part of that romance with you. And yet, like, I still obviously mean a lot to both of you and you both mean a lot to me. But I found myself, like, trying to figure out and juggle at times, like, where I fit with that. So I don't know, which is interesting. I don't know, like, exactly what to say about that, but just to be like mindful about where you exist within the lives of like your friends and that can also change over time. But it was an interesting thing for me. And like you and I and Dedeker were in Tokyo last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that like we kind of had some like airing of grievances, like especially you and I were able to like talk through some stuff. I know when Dedeker and I were together in Bulgaria alone, like we were able to talk about some stuff that happened like regarding our breakup. And that was really important for me. And I think just again to be communicative, especially if like a relationship matters deeply to you, that's a really important thing to go through, even though it can be potentially challenging in the moment.
Something that I've thought about actually when we were talking about that earlier is that when you're transitioning, like when Emily and I broke up and we're remaining friends, it was definitely difficult for that first while because I think there was definitely hurt on both sides. And, you know, even if we felt amicable about it, there's still some things that you're hurt about.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about some of those things. And then, like we said, around 6 months, like things all of a sudden felt much better.
Yeah.
But I think what's important to realize is that those things still might come up again. So like that conversation you mentioned in Japan, where we both talked about those things again, of kind of like what some of our hurts were at that time, or like the things that we perceived at the time or how we felt at the time.
Yeah.
That we talked about those things. And that was, you know, 2.5 years after it had happened, that it's not like a sort of, we've talked about it, we've clarified it, we're done.
No, totally. Right? It, like, still can come up and, like, things can, like, change and evolve even within your perception of what occurred and, like, how you fit into that. And not saying, like, it was a blaming thing or whatever. It was just like, hey, like, this is something that still is challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it wasn't like a happy conversation, obviously, but it was good to be able to talk about those things and to be very real with each other. And I think that's something that for, at least in my experience with you, Emily, like the more time has gone by since then, the more, I guess sort of the more like clear and honest I feel like we've been able to be with each other.
Sure.
Because it doesn't feel as much like you're trying to blame the other person for something.
Yeah, how fascinating that is.
Because like, there's some time separating you,
sure.
Right?
No, I mean, absolutely. But like, even when you're in, like, I know for myself, sometimes when I'm in intimate romantic relationships, like, it does become this, like, tit-for-tat thing. Mm. Or this, like, thing of, like, well, you know, you're doing this to me. Or you take something so much more personally than when it is a friend. And that, and again, to, like, air those grievances in a way or, like, discuss them in a really proactive and, like, mature way as opposed to maybe when we would have been together talking about those things and, like, there would have been a lot more emotion behind it. Not that it wasn't emotional, because it was.
Right.
But still, like, you're able to speak about it in a better fashion,
and, like,
perhaps.
Less defensiveness.
Yeah, totally. Sure. Totally, which is really fascinating.
It, you know, it's interesting, actually, in talking about that, I found actually the same thing for me, even with Dedeker, in our relationship, talking about stuff that happened further in the past.
Yeah, that, I can imagine.
And I imagine our listeners, too, who've been in a relationship for, you know, a longer amount of time, have definitely found something similar, where, like, you can talk a little more frankly about things that happened longer ago.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have that immediate, like, I'm saying you're bad, but instead we can talk about the situation a little more objectively because we have more distance.
Yeah.
In this case, distance in the fourth dimension of space-time.
yes.
Yes.
Yes, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like Emily was saying, and, you know, we won't get into to all of this now, but like around that time, 3 years ago, there were a lot of changes and a lot of like difficult things that happened in all of our relationships, each with each other and also with Brad and other people in our lives, that like a lot of things really got shaken up around that time. And Dedeker and I are also able to talk with each other much more frankly about that now.
Yeah.
And like really honestly help each other understand ourselves better by saying, well, this was my perception of what happened then. And these were things that I noticed happened. And, you know, whether that's like because I'm seeing a similar thing with you now or I'm noticing how different you are now, that we're able to have those conversations in a way now that we couldn't.
Yeah.
A couple years ago.
That's
when it
great.
Was fresher. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've definitely found that with you and I.
Sure.
Like you were just talking about, that we were able to, you know, to talk about all that. To like really be honest about kind of the hurts we were still holding on to.
Sure.
And allow each other that time to talk about that.
Yeah, and to process it, which I think again is it can be a really important thing for our listeners. I'd like to think just to give yourself time, but if you still do have a relationship that is out there that you hold on to and that you're friends with still, and things like this come up, like maybe that time will give you the ability to talk about it in a better fashion or just like a less intense, less emotional fashion, maybe.
And I think that's part of the importance of giving that space too.
Yeah.
And allowing that transition
for sure
to happen.
Even on like a super micro level, like in disagreements that you have with anyone, like giving a little bit of space, which for me as spewer is really difficult in the moment,
yes.
But it can be very good. It can be very good to like give just a slight amount of space.
And this brings us to the question of why stay friends with an ex.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. I mean, there are a multitude of reasons. Like obviously for you and me, we wanted to, like we made that a priority from the beginning. We were like, no, like we still want to be in each other's lives. Like there's still so much good here and we don't want to let that go.
And I think there were a number of factors, right? There was that.
There was like, the podcast.
There's still a lot of good here, but then there was also a sort of a logistical thing of the podcast. We still had this together.
Which was very young at that point, but we knew that we wanted to continue it and we really were committed to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we found this study when I typed into Google earlier how to stay friends with an ex.
An ex, yeah.
And the one of the studies that came up was a 2017 study that came out of the University of Kansas. And this particular study was looking at people who have stayed friends with an ex or have tried to stay friends with an ex. And one of the things they found is that through some surveys that they did, they identified four main categories, like four main reasons why people will choose to remain friends with an ex. Mm-hmm. So the first of those is security. And by security, they mean like, I don't want to lose the trust or the advice or the friendship that I have with this person. Mm. The next one is practical. And that's like we were talking about. You have a podcast together, or you have a kid together, or you own a house together.
So ours was like both of those things.
Right. So I think we had both of those aspects in ours.
Yeah.
The third one is civility, which is more like, well, I don't want to hurt this person. I want to be kind to them. I think there was an aspect of that one as well.
Sure.
And then the fourth one is unresolved romantic desires. And this is you decide to remain friends with an ex because you still feel like you're in love with them and still want to be romantic with them. And so, first of all, they identified these four reasons, and like we were saying, you might have some of each of those, but if you get really honest with yourself, you might see, like, I think I'm definitely more in this category than another, you know?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, former, or parents who still like have kids, they're in one specifically, probably, for a big reason.
Right. So what they found in this study is that then they looked at two things. They looked at how long those relationships, like how long those friendships lasted after the breakup. And then they also looked at how positive those relationships were. And, you know, positive meant, you know, feeling, you know, good, feeling like you're getting something good out of that relationship. It's a relationship you value. And negative being feeling things like jealousy and depression and heartbreak and, you know, a lot of negative emotions tied to that relationship. And what they found was that people who stayed friends because of either the security reason or the practical reasons led to the most positive friend relationships after a breakup.
Interesting.
And then the one that's really interesting is that the one that was unresolved romantic desires resulted in the most negative relationships, like feeling the most jealousy and upset and depression and heartbreak about that friendship, which isn't necessarily surprising. But the really surprising part is that they also were the longest lasting friendships.
Fascinating.
So not only were they not giving you what you wanted, making you more unhappy than they're making you happy, but they also tended to hold on to them the longest.
Jeez. And this, that's really tough because it does like go into the next thing, which I wanted to say, which is like, who are these people that we shouldn't maybe remain friends with? And that's a good example of one, like someone maybe who we still harbor these feelings for, but they have moved on from you. And it's not necessarily
it's kind of an attempt to not let them
go and move on. Exactly. Yeah. But like when somebody can't let the relationship go, or when somebody wants different things than you do, then maybe that's a good sign of like, okay, I need to let this go. And that can be really difficult in situations like that when you still have like deep feelings for them.
It can be hard to admit to yourself.
Oh yeah. It's like well, no, I just like, I don't want to like see them, you know, do poorly or not, or like miss out on something. And like, I still want to be involved in their lives. I care about them so much, but what are you really feeling here?
Yeah. And I definitely feel like I've been in that situation.
Oh yeah.
In one way or another, even not a breakup, but like someone I've been interested in and said it and they've said that they're not, but then trying to maintain this like close friendship.
Yeah.
I think that's a very similar thing of like, it tends to lead to more negative feelings than positive ones.
Yeah.
But also can really get drawn out a long time. And it's
it's like a heady, like kind of needy experience. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to see in yourself.
Totally.
And, like, admit, like, what are those reasons?
Yeah.
But what would be some other reasons why not to remain friends with an ex?
Well, obviously this is a kind of a given, but somebody who's emotionally or physically abusive to you, like, don't fucking keep those types of people in your life. And it's interesting because I had a relatively emotionally abusive ex who I ended up having to live with the year afterwards in college because we had signed like a lease over the summer and then broke up over the summer. And then like got back to school and had to live together in this place.
That's why we say don't sign anything.
Don't
in the
sign
first
anything.
Year.
Just don't. Yeah, that was a bad idea. But he ended up like after some shit really went down and he was like we were both like really upset and it was clear that he was relatively emotionally abusive. He ended up like apologizing profusely to me. And I really did appreciate that, and I still have him in my life to a degree because I think that he understood like the way that he had treated me and that he had been emotionally abusive, and that was a really bad thing in my life and in his, and he apologized, and I really commend him for that.
But that's definitely a minority of cases.
Yes. And I mean, I'm assuming, I don't know. I'd like to think that people like have the wherewithal to say like, wow, I was an asshole. But I don't know if they do.
Well, that's the thing is in truly abusive relationships,
sure.
Especially if it's a systematic thing that person is doing, mm-hmm. like it doesn't tend to go that way.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, that it does tend to be something that will just continue whatever type of relationship it is.
Yeah.
And I think that what gets people caught up is that they feel like, well, if I don't stay friends with them or if I don't stay in a relationship with them, that mm-hmm. somehow I've failed.
Yeah.
And we have this idea that like if a relationship fails, it means you're a failure.
Sure. That's true.
I think it's a big part of, especially like for me, a lot of relationships I've stayed in longer than I've wanted to is because I didn't want to fail at them.
Interesting.
Because I definitely was taught this idea that, you know, like we praise relationships for how long they last, not for how good they are.
Yeah, that's true. Like,
right?
Oh
Someone
my God,
has a 50th
Grandma and Grandpa were in a relationship
right.
for 60 years. Wow.
Right.
But they don't like talk to each other ever.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, maybe they do, but we don't stop to ask that question.
Yeah.
We just go, oh, congratulations. Or, oh, wow, that's so amazing. Or, oh, that's so romantic.
Mm-hmm.
Like just lasting is the thing that matters. Like
yeah.
that's the reason to do it. And that's the advice I would get from my grandparents about that sort of thing.
Jeez.
It's just like, that is all that matters. And if you're not doing that, you just haven't either matured enough or don't have enough faith in God or, you know, haven't worked hard enough or something. Right.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. Like who else would you not want to be friends with after the fact? I mean, again, yeah, just somebody who doesn't share the same hopes for the new relationship that you do. Someone who's pining or
yeah.
someone who like wants certain things from you that you can't give or just anything. Like if it doesn't fit the structure and the type of relationship that you want, like maybe it's not the best thing.
Yeah. And I think that's important to bring up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we mentioned like emotionally or physically abusive people, like you don't try to remain friends with them. Like really
yeah.
don't. I know it can be tempting because you might think that they need you or that somehow that will make things better or you'll get that apology you never got before.
Mm.
But that's most likely not going to happen. And instead,
yeah.
you're going to stay in that sort of, you know, bad abusive situation. So really do get out of that and seek help if you're in that sort of situation to help you see that for what it is.
Yeah.
But even aside from like those more extreme examples, I think also if it's a relationship that just doesn't like bring more positive emotions than negative ones to your
yeah.
life, even as a friend.
Yeah.
Like we talked before in that episode about the science of happy relationships, of saying that, you know,
yeah.
80 to 90% of your reactions, if not higher, should be positive ones.
Sure.
And you should have this minority that are more negative, as opposed to some people who are like, 50-50 is good enough, right? But like, that's not. Like, that's
no.
not a way to have a happy relationship.
And not for your friendships either.
And the same is true with your friendships. And I think that with our friends, we just do that more naturally.
Yeah.
Like where we just kind of drift away from friends if we feel like it's like I'm not having a good time when I hang out with this person. You might just hang out with them a little bit less.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, this person is negative or whatever. Yeah, you may just like not return their calls as often.
Right, or just that the two of you don't get along. Like
mm-hmm.
it might even be okay that they're negative. It's not like everyone has to be happy all the time.
Yeah.
But maybe there's some incompatibility there.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just not positive. And I feel like if it's just always been a friendship, we let those drift apart. Whereas if it was a formerly romantic relationship and we have this like, if I can keep this friendship going, then I haven't failed, mm-hmm. even though the romantic parts ended. Mm-hmm. I think we can definitely fall into that trap.
Sure.
That can keep us in those relationships that aren't serving us. That might actually be making our lives worse, even if, you know, even if we feel like proud of ourselves for making them last.
Sure. That's not the end all do all of the relationships. The So I guess finally, just with all of this, nothing is an absolute, nothing is absolutely final. When we're talking about all this stuff, you might find that even that friendship that transitioned from a romantic relationship maybe isn't serving you later on in your life. You might find that that relationship becomes a romantic relationship again. It can continue to change and ebb and flow over time. So that's great and that's awesome. And again, from the relationship anarchy standpoint, mm-hmm. you get to decide, you both together get to decide what that looks like. And that's really wonderful that we as human beings get to choose that and that we don't have to do this thing that just this relationship escalator and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. With anyone.
Yeah. And that not even in your romantic relationships, but also in moving toward friendships that I've found it sounds terrible to say, but the older I get, and I'm not very old yet, but the older I get, the more I see gosh, things can really change over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially seeing all the ways that our relationship has changed over the past 8 years.
Yeah.
From being these young kids meeting and
yeah, and I was fucking 22 when I met you.
Jeez, such a
and
baby.
I'm 30 now.
Yeah,
crazy.
That starting that relationship to all the stages that we went through, monogamously mm-hmm. to then opening up to then being polyamorous to then breaking up and then being friends and then building to this even closer emotional friendship.
Yeah,
that seeing all that and just being man, you know what, I feel like so many times in my life I've given a lot more meaning to the way things are right now, being oh, these things are the way they are right now, or this relationship is as close as it is right now because it was meant to be, or, right, there's some meaning of this has got to be the one, or this has to be the place I'm supposed to be, or this is the answer to all my relationship problems. And instead, now with a little more time perspective to see that, it's just these things can always be changing.
Yeah, they're whatever they are in the moment.
But that you're still able to sort of choose what are the good relationships in my life. And then also how can I make those better?
Yeah.
How can I be intentional?
Yeah.
And not just kind of accept what happens to me.
Yeah.
But be an active participant in all of my relationships, whether they're my friendships or my romantic relationships or my business partners or whatever it is.
I guess I have at one time been all of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
No, and I think we've done a really good job being intentional. Mm-hmm. So good on us. And hopefully good on you all out there. And hopefully you learned a little something from this.
Yeah, I think even making the space to be intentional about them.
Yeah.
Whether it's even something having a radar with your friends.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I've still never done. I need to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, we have our own business radars all the time.
Right. Well, maybe we should do a radar.
I know. Okay. Jeez.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, we'll do that. We'll report back to you. But yeah, thank you all so much for spending this sort of intimate, Dedeker-free episode.
We love you, Dedeker.
Yes. And thank you all so much. And if you have a question or a comment that you would like us to talk about on the show, you can call us at
678-MULTI-05.
I did a low version.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I was what the key are you fucking in?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Jeez. And there you can call that 678-MULTI-05 and leave us a voicemail, or you can send us an audio message on the Multiamory Facebook page if you are international. You can also send us an email at info@multiamory.com, or you can send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Just search for Multiamory and you'll find us. To support our show and join our private Facebook community and get cool things like early episodes with no ads or monthly discussion groups, go to patreon.com/multiamory. Multiamory is created and produced by Emily Matlack, Dedeker Winston, and me, Jace Lindgren. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.